Senate Judiciary Committee leaders are asking the White House to immediately make public how it has dealt with potential ethical interests. This request comes as President Trump's administration is embroiled in controversy over its ties to profitable private interests. The administration is under fire for hiring former lobbyists to lead sensitive positions. Bringing this up now because this is a recent example of how trust is being called into question. We're examining distrust in government this hour and what can be done to restore it with Donald Kettle. He's professor and former dean in the School of Public Policy at the University of Maryland. He's also a non-resident senior fellow at the Partnership for Public Service, the Volcker Alliance, and the Brookings Institution. His new book is Can Governments Earn Our Trust? Donald, welcome to the program.
It's great to be with you today.
Well, you don't mince words. You come out and say it in the first sentence, the first line of your book. That is, the rising tide of distrust in government is surely one of the biggest challenges facing the world's democracies in the 21st century. How so?
It is just a fundamental and, it turns out, universal problem for governments everywhere. The basic problem, and you really got right at it in your introduction, the problem is that for us to be able to trust our elected officials, to be able to take part in the processes we've created, we need to have trust in what it is that our officials do. And the problem is that, especially at the national level, not only in the United States, but also around the world, this problem of trust is enormous, and unfortunately, it is growing. And so as you look both at the United States, but at other countries like Japan and France and South Korea and Greece, it's just, we find ourselves in the United States in the middle of a very big, very important, and very global kind of problem.
How are we seeing this erode democracy then?
The problem is this. Politicians campaign for our votes. They say, elect me and I will go to, in this case, say, Washington to solve our problems. I get to Washington and then all kinds of mischief starts happening. And as the mischief starts happening, I say, well, why did I vote for these guys? Why don't they solve our problems? Why are we seeing all these sideshows on the side? I don't really trust what they do. I don't trust they're looking out for me. I don't trust that they are going to be representing my views or effectively solving the problems. Why should I bother to go out to vote? And so it tends to depress turnout. It tends to make us distrust more the kinds of things that they do. And it makes it that much harder to try to build the kind of really strong, broad-based coalitions or even kind of narrow, just barely more than majority votes that are needed to solve anything that really matters. And so it is pernicious. It makes it hard to get people to turn out to vote. It makes it hard for policymakers to get consensus about solving problems. And it makes it hard for democracy to try to survive. Now it's important to remember that some of this stuff is not new. There's a show on Broadway that if you wanted to go see today, you probably could go pay $2,000 a ticket called Hamilton. And it is about people who, in some cases, don't really like each other, are battling each other in op-eds and newspapers, even making personal threats, and in one case, actually having a former vice president shoot the former Treasury Secretary. So there are the problems of friction and trust is nothing new. But the problem here is that they've reached epic proportions in ways that have implications for all of us in the way that governments try to govern.
So, you know, we're Americans. We look at polls. Earlier this year, the Pew Research Center reported that public trust in the U.S. government remains near historic lows. Pew's survey found that only 20% of Americans today say they can trust the government in Washington to do what is right, quote, just about always, or, quote, most of the time. So, Professor Kettle, just how did things get this way? How did they get this bad?
And it's important to note that they haven't always been this bad. If you go back to, say, 1958, toward the end of the Eisenhower administration, the answer to the question that you just asked was 73% of Americans trusted government to do, and this is the government in Washington, to do what is right always or almost all the time. And after the Kennedy administration, with the problems that began to grow in both domestically in terms of civil rights battles and then internationally and globally in terms of Vietnam, trust fell. Fell through most of the Johnson administration, fell through Watergate, fell through Jimmy Carter's administration and the problems that we had with Iran. They began to bounce back during Reagan and came back up a bit. But then as we got into the battles of the Clinton administration, we got into the fierce battles that Clinton had with the Republicans. Things got bad. But then they started to get a bit better as, in fact, the economy improved. And then with 9/11, we saw what really amounts to the recent high as Americans rallied around government in the aftermath of the terrorist attacks. But since then, it's been a steady, unfortunate, negative, depressing story as trust in government has eroded bit by bit from around 50% after 9/11 down to 20% now. And it's actually we're at the point now, if you just ask about Congress, head lice is more popular than, in fact, Congress is, according to one survey. It is bad, and it's undermining our ability to have trust in the way that our democracies operate.
Sounds like it also permeates our life. There are little fragments of it happening. It can also set off events in our life, as you mentioned, apathy, people not then going to vote. They think perhaps it's not going to matter. So how does this start to spread, this distrust start to spread from one person to another and then affect a population?
And that's a great question. And before answering it, let me just say that there is good news at the end of the story that I've got to tell here in this new book. So I don't want everybody to wake up in the morning and say, why am I tuning in to listen to such a depressing story?
Gloom and doom.
But it turns out that this does spread, and it spreads in ways that are really pernicious. And there are a couple things that go on here. The first is that you look at all what's going on, and so as you pointed out, people ask the question, why should I even bother to show up to vote? And it's clear that this is depressing the inclination of people to go to the voting booth and cast a vote because they're not sure that it matters. Then when people start talking about politics, increasingly what's happening is that we have a set of echo chambers that are set up where we tend to talk to people who are like us, that we tend to chat with people online, with people who are, say, Facebook friends, and we tend to talk to people who more or less share our ideas. And so this tends to emphasize, reinforce, and to spread the kinds of things that, in fact, tend to further undermine trust. People who don't much like government tend to talk to other people who don't much like government. People who, say, disagree on health reform or disagree on questions of infrastructure or on welfare tend to talk to other people who share their views. They tend to get their news from similar kinds of sources. And so the population increasingly is getting fragmented, and people tend to listen to the people who share their views. That only reinforces things. And then when members of Congress, for example, sit down to try to talk about big issues, like, for example, health care, we find that it's harder for them to try to find ways of making compromise because they are getting reinforcement from their constituents back at home who are part of this echo chamber. Many of them are part of that echo chamber themselves, and it just simply makes it hard to govern and find ways of getting consensus on the important problems that we have to solve. So this is a big and fundamental problem. It's worth pointing out that we're not alone. If there is an international survey that shows that trust isn't good here in the United States, but we're about between Japan and France in terms of international surveys. We're a bit higher than South Korea and Greece, so it can get worse, actually, believe it or not. But there are other countries where support and trust in government is substantially higher, including the United Kingdom and Canada and the Scandinavian countries. So it's a universal problem. We are about average when it comes to distrust. Some countries have got it worse. Some countries have it much better, but it's clearly affecting us all, and in the United States in particular. You can see what happens when Congress tries to solve tough problems, and it is just undermining our ability to be able to get anything done.
So how much of a role does partisanship play here in distrust?
A big part of this is that we have increasing polarization that in many cases are bubbling up from the states. You see the kinds of battles that have started to pop up in state legislatures and local politics that then lead to the ways in which we draw legislative boundaries that elect members of Congress, the House in particular, of course, that then tends to lead to more polarizing districts, tend to lead to more polarizing candidates, that lead to more polarizing members of Congress, that when they get to Washington find it harder to sit and talk with each other. And that's one of the big things that have changed. I spent a lot of my time here in Washington now, roaming around town, talking to politicians, meeting with senators, members of Congress, their staffs, as well as administrators. And the atmosphere is just, it's not fun. It's poisonous. And you can just feel the oxygen getting sucked out of the room when it comes to the big debates that we have to try to confront.
And we're going to have hold that thought for a moment. We're discussing distrust in government with Don Kettle. He's a professor, a former dean in the School of Public Policy at the University of Maryland. New book is Can Governments Earn Our Trust? You can join the conversation, 800-642-1234. Have you lost trust in government? If so, why? What happened? Do you have faith in government regardless of what party is in power? Join in, 800-642-1234, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Distrust in government, it's nothing new. It's been around for decades. Researchers can trace this sentiment back to the Vietnam War, for sure, back to Watergate, back to difficult economic challenges like recession and changes in how we live our lives, make a living. Here's something to think about. Is trust in government rooted in our inability to overcome deep, deep divisions in our country? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234, or post your thoughts on government trust over on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's now go to Peter in Madison. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi, I want to say that the event that I think led to a lot of distrust in government was what happened in 2008 with the bailout. The fact that the Wall Street types could just go to the U.S. Treasury and demand $1 trillion to bail them out while homeowners were left twisting in the wind, I think played a big role in it. Barack Obama won a huge landslide victory right after that happened on the premise that he was going to protect the American people from what happened. But one of the first things he did was appoint Timothy Geithner as his Treasury Secretary, and he said, I'm the only one who's standing between the people with the pitchforks and the bankers. And then after that, there was no prosecutions. He didn't take any of their money away. He didn't show any solidarity with the people who felt like the Wall Street people basically just took money from the government. And so I think that whole event, the fact that he won in a landslide and then did nothing about the fact that the financial crisis happened.
Let's get Don Kettle to weigh in here. What do you make of what Peter's saying there?
I mean, Peter certainly has a point where people are concerned that the people who are inside, well-heeled and well-connected, are the ones who benefit too often from what government does. On the bailout, though, it's important to make a couple points. The first is that it's a little easy to forget now, but the economy was in not just a terrible shape, was in a disastrous position back in 2008. And the most important thing that the government had to do at that point was to try to just put more stability, put the wheels back onto the system. And given the fact that we all rely on banks, that really meant that the federal government had to find a way to make sure that the banks stayed above water. And that in turn meant that they had to find a way to try to infuse capital into the system so it all just didn't collapse on us. That, of course, made it look like we were just bailing out banks, but of course we were, but the banks we were bailing out were all of our banks, and bailing out the manufacturing businesses too at the same time. The auto industry has rebounded incredibly since then, and it was on the verge of collapse to the point the federal government had to bail them out as well. So this is a complicated story that over time, I think, has had some of the important underpinnings really filed off of it. The fundamental problems of what we faced in the country at that time are just absolutely, totally disastrous. And had we not done what we did, we would be having a very much different conversation now. But the problem is it's very hard to see government's more positive role in this at the same time that it looks like people who were responsible for the problems may not have been held accountable. And that's, of course, because the underlying pieces were so complicated and so interrelated and so connected to international forces that it got to be very hard to sort through it all and just find somebody to put in jail, despite the fact that we were all so very upset about what it is that happened.
It sounds, too, that trust is very much interwoven with how our economy goes around, how money works, where money is, whether it's in our pocketbooks or not in our pocketbooks, whether it is in our lawmakers' hands or not in our lawmakers' hands. What about trust and money?
And that is a great question, because if you look at the underlying piece of this and try to figure out what to do, because my book is really focused on the basic question, as the title suggests, can governments earn our trust? And part of the problem of distrust is at the wholesale level, which is what we've been talking about so far. And that has to do especially with problems of income inequality and the problems of whether or not government's delivering high quality of standards of living for each of us. And there the problem is, for the last generation, for most of us in the country, no matter how hard we work, even if we have two spouses out there earning incomes, even if we go and get higher education, work hard for better jobs, the actual standard of living hasn't really improved very much. And so there's a sense that we really have tried to follow the rules, have tried to set go by what it is that the expectations have been for a long time, but it doesn't seem to substantially have made a difference. We're struggling harder and harder just to stay even, and we don't trust government because it doesn't look like government's keeping its deal at the wholesale level. So that's the big problem. The good news, and I don't want to have a totally completely depressing conversation here, but the good news is that the question is, can governments earn our trust? And the answer is yes, but where it happens, it has to happen at the retail level, where government interacts with us on a daily basis.
And how does government interact with us on a daily basis here on our home front, here in our own towns and communities? Oh, are you there, Don? Oh, I think we've lost Don here for a moment. Don Kettle is a professor. He's a former dean in the School of Public Policy at the University of Maryland. He's also a non-resident senior fellow at the Partnership for Public Service, the Volcker Alliance, and the Brookings Institution. He's the author of the new book, Can Governments Earn Our Trust? We're talking about trust this hour and trust in government. The new Edelman Trust Barometer finds that trust is in crisis all over the globe. The general population's trust is eroding in all four key institutions: business, government, non-governmental organizations, and media. With the fall of trust, the majority of respondents now lack full belief that the overall system is working for them. We're discussing this issue of government trust with Professor Don Kettle of the University of Maryland School of Public Policy. His new book is Can Governments Earn Our Trust? You can join in this conversation at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Do you trust your lawmakers at the local level, at the national level? If so, why or why not? And when did you lose your trust in government? 800-642-1234. There are threats to our democracy all around us. There are multiple investigations underway into Russia meddling with our election. There's a steady diet of fake news reminders flowing from President Trump's tweets. There are fears that our electronic voting systems have been hacked or could easily be hacked. So we are discussing distrust in government this hour with Don Kettle and what it means. Don, are you there?
I am back. My apologies there. My Wi-Fi cut me off. I think this is, I was trying to deliver some good news, actually. Because it turns out, actually, that there is a piece of good news here. The basic question is, can governments earn our trust? And at the retail level, where citizens connect with government and where government delivers services, it turns out that the quality of that interaction affects whether or not citizens trust the reactions that they get. And there's a great survey that happened by a major private sector organization about a year ago. They went out and asked, do you trust and what is your level of satisfaction with the services that you're getting? And the second biggest increase in customer experience of any organization in the entire country turned out to be the State Department agency that issues passports.
Ah.
And they've been out there working really hard to make that process easier and better and more friendly. And the second biggest increase of any organization in the country, of including any private organization, was the State Department. And the same survey showed that even our friends at the Internal Revenue Service substantially improved their customer experience, because there's a mobile app that allows you to track the status of your tax bill and your refund. And even, believe it or not, healthcare.gov, getting beyond all the battles over what kind of health care to have, the basic question of are you satisfied with your interactions with healthcare.gov, it turns out there is a very high level of satisfaction. So if we have a set of interactions between citizens and government in ways that reinforce the basic and positive kinds of expectations that we have, citizens see that, they notice it, they appreciate it, and at least at the retail level, it is possible for governments to earn our trust.
So if you're seeing government working for you and getting something done that revolves around your life, then that automatically builds your trust in what government is all about.
Exactly. And again, it's the sort of thing, if you stop and think about it, it makes sense. I mean, we see government happening all the time, but we're not sure how it benefits us. Where government does benefit us, whether you're waiting for an ambulance after an accident, whether you see a fire being put out by the local fire department, or whether the people who manage passports are especially good at delivering good service to you, you see that, you notice it, you appreciate it, and that's the government that you tend to trust. And the biggest problem that we have is that government has tended to look too indirect, too impersonal, too disconnected from us, and in the end, not really working for me, not really working for you. And when that happens, that tends to feed distrust.
Let's now go to Peter in Milwaukee. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
So I find this a very interesting topic. I live in a small town south of La Crosse, Viroqua, and I've been there 10 years, and it's come to know people in the city council, and I come to know the police officers, and I just find that the level of trust I have in my government is improving because of actually knowing people at a local level. Now, on the other hand, there was one incident that happened last summer, I believe, where there's this policy where all the plants that grow over 8 inches in the boulevards, are the local landowners in town are supposed to keep those below 8 inches, and some weren't. And some city workers just went and cut them all down. And the belief was that the mayor was behind that. And so when you have situations like that, that can lead to breaking of trust.
Interesting. Don, can you weigh into what Peter is saying there?
Yeah, I think that's really the core point. There really is the question of, does government seem to be working for me? Do I trust the nature of that interaction? Or even if I don't agree with what's happening, do I at least feel that at least I'm being listened to? And that's why the citizen experience and that interaction of things that I care about is so incredibly important. And the good news is that, as Peter pointed out, if I make that kind of connection, if I see government working, then I tend to trust more what government does, even if I don't agree with it. If it looks like there are people who are involved who have an inside track, who don't end up benefiting me, or if I play by the rules and I end up in a situation where it's not really helping me, then at that case, then I tend to distrust what government does. And it's actually the same thing, as it turns out, with private organizations and with other kinds of institutions that we deal with, too, at the same time. We just really want to have a sense that the people who are in charge of making decisions for us are listening to us, are paying attention to us, are paying attention to our needs, and are trying to do their best to try to serve us. If we see that happening, then trust tends to grow. If it looks like it's an inside baseball game that we're not invited to, that's what feeds distrust. And you see that all the way from Washington all the way to our local communities.
Peter, thanks so much for calling in with that observation. Let's now go to Steve in Eau Claire. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, you know, government can and has worked in the past. I don't hear any seniors complaining that their Social Security checks don't come on time, you know, these kinds of things. The problems are several, but they are all related to the politicians and the lawmakers, to me. Since the 70s, it's been a very popular thing for politicians to run against the government. The government is the problem. Well, I'm sorry, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy when you do that. And in some administrations, they have sabotaged programs and then turn around later and said, see, it doesn't work. You know, to me, that's just so hypocritical. And then on top of it, you've got arcane rules like the filibuster in the Senate, and now both parties have made an agreement that if they don't get the 60 votes, you don't even have to hold the floor anymore like you used to have to do in order to hold a filibuster. And so they've gummed it up worse than it used to be.
Let's go to Don to weigh in here. Don.
The problem here is that it's gotten really easy to campaign against big government without stopping to ask what it is that the government did. I was talking to a large group of fairly senior federal officials yesterday, and one of them said, what would happen in one of these crazy government shutdowns that we keep going through that, in fact, we really shut down the government? And people would notice it. As I was talking, I was right across the river from Washington National Airport, and if we shut down the government instantly, all of a sudden there would be a plane on final approach that would have a hard time finding a runway. There'd be crowded airspace with people trying to find their ways around. We would find that the fire engine that passed in front of our building would just simply stop, and whoever it is that they were trying to rescue would end up in a situation where where's the fire department, and how are they going to try to save us? The people who are in charge of making sure that the food that we eat in the restaurants would not be there. It turns out that we depend much, much, much more on government, and in fact appreciate government much more than in fact we often recognize. It's just that we often don't stop to talk about it because it's gotten to be so fashionable to trash each other instead of trying to solve the problems. And it's not that, heaven knows, it's not fun to complain, and I complain along with everybody else about decisions I don't like. But the problem is that we've lost the sense of a search for a common purpose in trying to solve the problems that we share. And the good news, as I point out in this book, Can Governments Earn Our Trust, is that it is possible to earn our trust if, in fact, we at least focus on making sure that the interactions between each of us and the government on the things that we care most about works as well as it possibly can. And there we've actually made a fair amount of progress in ways that I think are actually pretty heartening in the middle of all this craziness that we're seeing.
Well, thank you, Steve, for calling in. And let's fit in one more call here before the break. Joe in Oconto. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
My question is, how do people, or especially the host and the guest, feel when government people give themselves their own raises? To the best of my knowledge, I can't think of any other institution that would permit such a thing. I know my boss wouldn't allow that. Hey, I would really like a 10% raise, boss. What do you think of that?
Yeah, Don.
The fact is that actually government employees, with the exception of members of Congress and legislators, can't give themselves their own raises. The amount of money, I'm a government employee, used to be actually a government employee of the great state of Wisconsin at the university there, and the raise that I got, when I got a raise at all, was decided by the state legislature. And the same is true in the private sector, where boards of directors and top executives make decisions overall. So it's one thing where members of legislatures make decisions about everybody else's pay, but for the most part, government employees elsewhere in the system get whatever raises they get because of the decisions that policymakers make. And that's the same way the rest of the laws operate. But if you think about it, that's actually the same way that the private sector operates, because boards of directors vote themselves whatever increases and bonuses that, in fact, they think they deserve. It's really a question of whether or not we think we're getting our money's worth. And that gets back to this basic question of retail trust and the interactions that each of us have with the governments that we have.
We're talking about trust in government this hour with Don Kettle. He's a professor at the University of Maryland School of Public Policy. His new book is Can Governments Earn Our Trust? Weigh in, 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Do you have trust in government at the local level, in your community, or at the national level? How does your trust differ in those areas? 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll be back after these news headlines here on the Ideas Network. There is a bright spot in this discussion about distrust. Distrust is not a forever thing. Trust changes. As Professor Don Kettle writes in his book, quote, there's a powerful and positive case that government officials can improve government standing by treating their citizens in trust-earning ways. We're learning about those ways this hour. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for the Joy Cardine Show. Join the discussion, 800-642-1234. Post your thoughts about government trust on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Don Kettle is with us. He's a professor and former dean in the School of Public Policy at the University of Maryland. He's also a non-resident senior fellow at the Partnership for Public Service, the Volcker Alliance, and the Brookings Institution. His new book about distrust in government and how it's arrived here. It's out now. Don, as we mentioned before, trust changes. It's distrust isn't forever. Do you see anything changing here on the horizon that would cause us to say, okay, this is going to get better?
I'm fundamentally an optimist. And in fact, when I set out to write this book, I said, I'm not even going to write it if it turns out the story is just one more reason to understand why is it government just screws up all the time. I'm just not going to do that. I wanted to go out and explore whether or not it is possible for government to earn trust. And there are two important things here. One is that the distrust is huge and it's epidemic, and it's just not going to come back to government just because government asked for it. It's got, in a day-to-day basis, government has got to earn the trust of citizens. And the next question is that possible? And it turns out that the answer is yes. There's a really interesting experiment that some researchers did in Boston. They went out and took a survey of citizens, and they showed them a video of city workers who were out there doing their job, everything from food safety inspections to building roads. And they showed them a video of people actually doing it. And afterwards, the trust that citizens had in the work that the government was doing went up. And why was that? It's because they saw the connection between the tax dollars that they're paying and the results that they were getting. And if you think about, you go to your local grocery store, you do a transaction online, you do the basic kinds of interactions we do all the time. Turns out that's the same kind of thing. If you have a good experience at your grocery store, you have a good experience on Amazon or at one of your other favorite websites, then it turns out you tend to trust those interactions. And government needs to earn trust in exactly the same way. So the good news is that it's possible to move the needle. It only happens if government, in very intentional ways, tries to do that and does it in ways that improves the relationship, the experience that citizens have with government. If you need the fire department and they're there, they put the fire out, you're going to trust the kind of work that they do.
Full phone lines right now. Let's go to Thomas in Cuba City. Go ahead, Thomas. Thomas, are you there? Nope, I don't think we have Thomas right now. Let's go to Fenton in Milwaukee. Go ahead, Fenton.
Good morning. I appreciate this discussion very much, and I'd like your speakers to address whether there's something beyond criminal prosecution that could have been done that might have preserved more trust in the people when Geithner and Obama made their decision. You know, I understand there were criminal prosecutions, but I think they were unsuccessful. Weren't there some things that could have been done to claw back that money from those pirates?
Done.
The problem underlying it is, again, to set the stage, this was a near meltdown of not only the American but the global financial circumstances. So the problem is that there were people who were involved, but it's very hard to fingerprint the people who were actually responsible for individual decisions in ways that you could prosecute. And not to make in any way an excuse for them, but the interconnections were so deep and so fundamental and so far-reaching that it was very difficult to pin the blame on anybody. To the degree, at least, you could bring them into court and convict them. But on the other hand, one of the things that was very useful is that you wanted to know how the bailout money actually was spent. When it came to the stimulus that the administration had, they created a website so that anybody anywhere could find out at any time exactly what was happening, I mean, on their block. And that turned out to be a very powerful thing, because when it came to the stimulus, there were very, very few charges of waste, fraud, and abuse, because, in fact, it was possible to understand where the money was being spent.
Fenton, thanks for the call. Let's now go to Jim in Janesville. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi. How can we trust our federal government when our president lies to us over and over?
I mean, that, to be absolutely frank, for a lot of people, the relationships that we have and what we hear and the kind of deep divisions are deep and huge and fundamental and problematic. And as I suggest in the book, at the wholesale level, and I talk a fair amount about Trump and the problem of the basic nature of the communication that we have, it's at the wholesale level, it's increasingly hard to trust what government does. We just need to be frank about that. And there's a whole set of things that could be done. The question about earning trust has to be done at the retail level and the way in which we interconnect with government every day. And so that's the positive side of the story. On the other side, what we need, if we're going to try to hold government accountable, is a strong and effective system of oversight by each of us, and in particular with the strong role of the media, to get to the bottom of what's going on so at least we understand, and as we understand, that we can make judgments.
But this
is as difficult a problem as we've had.
So what about transparency? How can transparency impact trust?
And it turns out that it's a surprisingly mixed message, because even in some societies, that more transparency does not lead to trust, because people like to just assume the government, in fact, operates. And one of those things, you don't want to look inside the sausage factory, because you don't always want to try to understand how the individual bits of sausage are being made. But fundamentally, transparency is important in understanding how the basic relationships work. When people go to work, whether it's at the local fire department or in the halls of Congress, when they sit, when they do their job, are they doing their job in ways that respects me? Are they out there looking for themselves, or are they trying to deliver value to citizens and taxpayers? And that's where transparency is tremendously important, and where, if we're going to try to rebuild trust, we need to go. And so the role of the media is incredibly important, the role of all of us as citizens, the role even of things like the Internet and the ability to have what really amount to unmediated conversations are tremendously important as well. So if we want to understand what's going on, we've got to be able to see what's going on, because, again, if you go back to that experiment in Boston, if you see what's happening and it looks like it's going as you'd hope it to go, then the more that you see it and like it, the more you're likely to trust it. And that's the importance of transparency with the media, even looking at these wholesale problems.
Well, thank you so much, Jim, for calling in. Let's now go to Ray near Madison. Hi, Ray. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call. First, I kind of just a comment on the media thing. Media is controlled by six major corporations, News Corp, Disney, Viacom, Comcast, Time Warner, and CBS. You know, and these are companies, you know, that are billionaire companies that are tied in with, the way things are. They're very much, very much happy the way things are. They're doing very well, and they want to keep it that way. So to get a straight story from the news, and you see that they're all talking about the same stuff, you know, I'm just wondering, you have to wonder if you're getting a good, a good read on what's going on.
Trust in media, Don. There's a parallel here as well to government.
Well, exactly, because the concern here, as Ray pointed out, is that you don't really trust sometimes what the media might be saying, because the media have their own interests, their own filters, their own interest in trying to promote certain kinds of stories, and that in itself is a further problem. But one of the things that is at least good is that first, and this isn't always healthy, but you can tune into whatever media most likely is going to reinforce and connect with your own views, so that makes it harder to be able to get a clear sense of the story, but at least you can understand the different points of view are presented in different kinds of ways. But the other thing is that there really are some ways of getting to the bottom of what's happening if you spend some time looking hard enough. I get a half dozen newsletters every morning that I pay careful attention to, and I don't believe any one of them in particular, but I do believe that if I read most of them, that I get a pretty good idea about what's going on, because you can have the biases counteract, balance each other out, and get to the point of understanding what's really happening. So it's possible to get to the bottom of things. It's important not to rely on any one source of media in particular, but on the other hand, as long as we can find ways of escaping that echo chamber that each of us finds ourselves in, the odds are pretty good we could get to the bottom.
So, Don Kettle, what will progress look like here? When will we see it? What does it look like?
And progress, let me start first at, as I've described it, at the retail level. The more that government officials pay attention to how can I deliver value to taxpayers in a way that they'll trust what I'm doing, then there are lots of government officials doing that, the better off we will be. And at the retail level, that's how we could begin to build trust and earn government's trust back. There's a lot of work going on about that. At the national level in particular, the situation, let's be frank, is difficult and ugly, and no matter what side of the spectrum that you're on, it's a very hard struggle here. But it has to begin with the role of the media in a way to try to look carefully and understand in the interest of transparency what's actually happening. It has to do with asking hard questions, and it has to do with us forcing our elected officials to try to focus on what value are you producing for me as a taxpayer? Are you in business for yourself, or are you focused on making sure that the air traffic control system works and that food is safe? Making sure that the things that we care about are the things that, in fact, we spend more time focusing on. And that is what it is that I think matters most in terms of earning trust.
And what are the barometers? How should we measure this going forward? How do we know that we're digging out of distrust?
There is, of course, this national survey that Gallup and others create, and the Pew Research Center has got a great long-term survey going back to the 1950s. That's the kind of benchmark for trust and distrust at the wholesale level. But there are some other important barometers conducted by organizations like Forrester Research that look at the level of retail trust in terms of citizens' experiences and the level and quality of the interactions that they have. And government agencies, in many cases, are spending a lot more time actually trying to do precisely that and trying to understand whether or not citizens are satisfied with the services that they're getting. And the more that we focus on that and ask government to do what it is that everything from our doctors to our credit card companies are doing, are you satisfied with the interactions that you're getting? The more we do that, the more we're going to shine a bright light on what works, improve what doesn't, and in the end, I think in a very hopeful way, earn government's trust back.
Thank you so much for joining us.
It's so great to be with you, Kate. Thanks so much.
Don Kettle is professor and former dean in the School of Public Policy at the University of Maryland. He's also a non-resident senior fellow at the Partnership for Public Service, the Volcker Alliance, and the Brookings Institution. His new book is Can Governments Earn Our Trust? This hour of the Joy Cardine Show was produced by Chris Molina and Naija Ellison. Michelle Johnson is our executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for the Joy Cardine Show, and we trust that you'll stay with us for more thoughtful conversation here on the Ideas Network.